local talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and the events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Paul Wearson, together with Howard Hammond. And hello to all you out there listening this morning and today. Hello, Howard. How are you?
Hello, Paul, and hello to you all out there in the field and those as listeners.
You might introduce the fact that we have a guest today. So, Howard, I'll let you do the honors for Kate here.
As a matter of fact, that's my pleasure. Kate, my first name, is the executive director of the Historical Association at Story City, Iowa. And we're pleased to have her here as a good spokesman for these counties' historical alliance, which we'll be covering here in a little while.
Well, welcome, Kate. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Kate is with Story City, and full disclosure, I'm from Story City too. So we have two Story Cityans here today. And Howard, what we're talking about today is the Story County Historical Alliance, and this is something that, in a way, unifies and helps to put together and help people act in concert in terms of the historical societies in various communities in Story County. So you might give a little history and let us know what that organization is, how it functions, and all this sort of thing. And Kate, you're welcome to have your input at any time.
Well, Paul, I'll be glad to give you a little kickoff, but you may have to cut me off a little while because I get so enamored and carried away when I talk about this alliance that we've had some great successes in recent years. It goes back further than my time, even though I'm ancient in the county. There was once, not maybe called Alliance, but an organization that existed in Story County to continue the communications between communities within our county and deal with history. Well, it was about maybe 7-8 years ago that we constituted, now called the Historical Alliance. Currently, there are 11 members, meaning of the 14 communities of our county, 7 have either historical associations or so-called societies, and we're very active, relating to each other. So the brief of it is that, strange as it may seem, the Alliance has no officers. So how can you have an organization without some basic trend or theme through with people leading? Well, we pass our leadership around, and Kate can clean me up here if I misspeak on how we're organized. But of those local cities, we move annually for 2 meetings of the Alliance a year, one in spring and one in the fall. And what we have is a traveling history in that we meet throughout the county from time to time on a planned schedule. First example, Ames in the spring, then we'll go to Cambridge in the fall, then we'll go to Gilbert in the spring, and on into Huxley in the fall so that we cover the whole county. And everybody has the opportunity to, excuse the expression here, show off and tell us locally what we're doing. We have local support from each of our cities and major support, and we can get into this a little later, as Kate, I'm sure, will want to express what's going to happen this fall, because we have the Story County supervisors join us, and we have that support. So if you want the detail, we can get into money, we can get into programs, we can converse, and look to Kate to give us the zinger on Story City here a little later, okay?
Yeah, well, now, Kate Feil, who is due in October. She's going to have a child in October. Congratulations, Kate.
Thank you.
And she's with the Story City Historical Society. Now, tell us about your involvement with this historical alliance and how that's enhanced or helped you in your work.
Sure. Coming here, moving back to Iowa about 3 years ago was the first time that I've kind of started being involved in this organization. And I think it's a really neat one. A lot of counties have a county historical society, and, you know, everything kind of gets funneled down from there to the smaller historical societies.
And a good example would be Boone. They
Correct.
Have a building and everything.
Exactly.
So that doesn't exist in Story County. We have a different way of doing
right, it. Right, right. So I think it's kind of fun for everybody to have their own little historical society. But then we can come together, you know, a couple times a year and meet and chat, and we do get a lot of sharing and good ideas that way too, from, you know, something else that somebody else is doing, either an exhibit or you know, how to get volunteers, that sort of thing. So we can come together and share that information. We also like to share artifacts. Ames, for example, gets something for Story City, they'll share it with us. Or Howard down at the south end of the county, if he's got something for somebody up here, you know, he can share it too. So it's kind of fun that way.
Yeah. And so when you meet regularly, and refresh me, Howard, how often do you meet? Is it quarterly? Or?
Just semi-annually, once spring, once fall.
But that's enough time for people to establish relationships and work together, know who's involved in each community. And I suppose the most important thing is just sharing ideas.
Right.
And one of those has to be fundraising for the historical societies. And, Kate, you might talk about a recent fundraiser for Story City. It was a cohabitation, really, with the Bertha Bartlett Library in Story City and the Story City Historical Society. Tell us what you did to raise funds.
Sure. Both of our organizations work together, and we each have foundations. So we were doing a foundation fundraiser. We had Peter Grady from Marshalltown come into Story City, and he did his one-man show on Ulysses S. Grant called Unconditional Surrender. So we had him come in last But July 25th, last Saturday, I'm trying to remember. But he did a really good job. He's a really neat speaker. It's about a 90-minute program, kind of on it starts out with the latter part of Grant's life and him writing his autobiography in order to, continue on with, supporting his family and that, because he was dying from throat cancer. So it's a very interesting program, and we enjoyed having that in and working with the library in town to kind of get a broader audience to show up and support both of our organizations.
What other fundraisers have you done in the past year or so? I think there's is there a milk can supper?
There was.
Tell me about the milk can supper.
We at the Historical Society try to do quarterly dinners or events to, have an event at least quarterly and get people into the museums and have something different. So we partnered with our newer meat locker in town in Story City, and it was actually their idea. So you take an old milk can, you layer your vegetables, and then there's some sort of meat in there. We used a old bologna recipe that's been in town forever in Story City. And so you layer everything, and you pour some water in there, and then you let it cook on a burner for about
Mulligan stew.
Yeah. Yes. So it cooks for about 70 to 90 minutes, and then you just pour it out, and you've got all your meat, your vegetables all ready to go right there. So it was a really interesting time. And then the meat market kind of talked about what they did over there and past meat markets that were in town, too. So it was a fun event.
Yeah, they had a good turnout for that, too. Howard, do you have things like that going on in Slater?
No, but I want to accent that a little more and give Kate a chance to really blossom on Story City. We're doing that in some of the other areas, but the thing I'd like to point out is the collaboration that goes on within the communities when you pull these things off. We like to think that some of the alliance units within each city are, in effect, leaders in the city. As she may mention, Kate helped me out. It was at the Greater Chamber of Commerce and other organizations in town that pulled this off with you. So, in other words, we don't want to boast too much, but we look to these organizations within each city as being part of the leadership of the community tied into the cities. And so, of course, our Slater Community Club sponsors the 4th of July that we talked about here a few weeks ago in this station. And so we're not alone in doing that. Secondly, what Kate mentioned, the idea of milk can what, Kate?
It's a milk can dinner.
Milk can dinner, okay. Well, we'll maybe have to capture that. We had a Vita Gold Creamery that had eggs and butter and cheese once in our city. Maybe we'll have to come up with some crackpot idea like that. Excuse me. Crackpot idea to have a good time with that sort of thing, too.
Well, Howard, I'd suggest a dunk tank. With you up there insulting everyone's girlfriend.
Wait, I've been there once when I was the mayor. Cut that out. I don't want that to come back.
Now, I promise you we'll do it on a warm day.
Okay.
But I think the most fantastic thing about Story City is that we have Kate in a position like that. Now, that's kind of rare within the towns, isn't it?
In fact, you zinged right onto one. Again, I'm pleased that Kate's here to back me up if I go err on citing history. But far as I know, the only paid people on staff, as you might say, employer or contracted employer, is at Ames, where they have a great staff here. And matter of fact, were their offices and building are right almost on top of KHOI here.
Right so down the street. Yeah.
Got it there together. And Story City, the second with Kate. The others of us, most everything, and we bragged this up with the county supervisors, the hundreds of people in volunteer base coming from each of the other organizations. So there isn't any money changing hands unless, for example, if I take a little trip to Iowa City to pick up some things about history and I bring it back, that I might be reimbursed for my travel, things like that. But otherwise, it's a volunteer base, except for those two cities, and we look to them. As Kate already mentioned, sometimes each of us comes up with something and say, well, gee whiz, this is more Huxley history than Slater history. When we next meet, we better haul these things into our alliance meeting and share it. So togetherness and who's leading, I guess.
And I think probably what you have here are very highly motivated individuals who are deeply involved because they want to be, and probably a core of people you can rely on to be there when you do something like a fundraiser or any of the things you collaborate on. That's kind of nice to have.
Correct. I may ask Kate here without going out on a limb. I don't know how active each setting is, but I believe every alliance member has a building or a site.
I believe so.
They all do, and so they have maintenance of buildings, I think, mm-hmm. to deal with, and the hours vary depending upon locally how they want to handle things. There's no dictation from the alliance as to how long you're going to be open, how receptive you're going to be. Most of the organizations have capability of, I believe, maybe they're all on the web. And I believe some on Facebook. Communication is the name of the game, as we both know, because here we are talking to KHOI.
Yeah, you have to be part of the digital world, too. And you have to be liked on Facebook or you don't exist, right?
Okay.
But now let's take a look at Story City here. Kate, you have, three facilities there?
We have four. Technically.
What am I missing here?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
We started out with our little brick building that's on Broad Street there on the main street through Story City, and they started out there in the early 80s, and then they just kind of progressed through town. We still have that brick building. We've got exhibits about old Main Street businesses in that building. And then in 1990, they acquired that Sheldahl school, one-room schoolhouse that we have. So that's we've had that for quite a few years now, too. And then we have the Bartlett House Museum, which is a 1903 Queen Anne home. And then in 2008, they built that brand new building behind that, which we call the Carriage House. So they're
on
the
same. Thinking of those two together.
As a combo, yeah. A lot of people do, but it's a lot of buildings, though.
But the Carriage House is beautiful. It was constructed very recently.
Yeah, 2008.
And the Bartlett Museum, that's a house. What period piece is that, early 20th century?
Or? Right. It was built in 1903, so we kind of have it 1903 to 1920 period as far as furnished right now.
Yeah, I've been in there, and it is very accurately furnished according to period piece furniture and all that sort of thing. But I want to tell you about a personal experience I had. I was in that brick building on mm-hmm. The first museum, and I was volunteering in one. It was a hot day, and I was in there, and here's this ledger, a handwritten ledger from the hospital. And I'm Paul Wearson, born February 3rd, 1943. I page through this and I find Celia Wearson, baby boy, as yet unnamed. So there's the notation in the hospital log of my birth. I was fascinated, this big heavy ledger, and right away there was my birth recorded in this longhand, just regular entry in there. And by and by, a grandfather came in with his little boy who was protesting going to a museum. Now, laying around that museum was the what we call a Smokey the Bear hat, the hat that was worn by infantrymen in World War I. And I put that hat on his head and marched him around the museum. Dum, 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 dum. And that boy protested when his dad wanted to leave the museum because there were so many interesting things that we pointed out. And that's the kind of fun you can have volunteering. And I know, Kate, that you staff these with volunteers on weekends.
Right, we do. We try to have all four buildings open on Sundays during the summer from 1 to 3 with volunteer staff. So it's kind of a project for one of our board members to find all those volunteers and staff each
building.
That's
a big task.
Yeah.
And also we have the carousel in Story City that is staffed by volunteers on weekends. So you're competing with the same group of motivated people.
I should tell you, Paul, your sighting of your birth record triggers another story very similar in our city. We were provided with the log of Dr. George Severson, a longtime leader in our community, and his son, Wayne Severson, who followed him in the medical profession in our community. Both of their logs are part now because they've provided them to our center. And we had a farmer come in the other day and had the same experience you did. He looked it up and found out that Dr. George accommodated the family by coming out to the farm home a half a mile out of town and deliver Wayne Rimothy for $27.50.
Oh, I was more expensive. It was $48.
Oh, my goodness.
I must be the elite or something like that. But look at the kind of rich experiences people have who volunteer. And look at the core of people who really care about history. Now, I'm a history nut, so I'm in the Civil War Roundtable in Des Moines. And by the way, that's where I saw Peter Grady do his portrayal of Grant. He is excellent. But, you know, the thing about history is there's constantly something coming up, something discovered. Now, the Civil War was 150 years ago. We're still having things emerge that are new because people are finding diaries and documents in the attic, you know, that no one knew was there. Here's a day-to-day diary of a Civil War soldier, either North or South. It's brand new information. And this is another concern I have, Kate and Howard. You know, we talk about documents and things that have been preserved. For instance, Jefferson, you know, Thomas Jefferson, as busy as he was and as involved as he was, as ambassador to France, presidents, you know, he left voluminous correspondence. And so much of scholarly work that's done in history is based on documents. You know, look at our national archives. My question is, for us history folks, what does it mean in the world of the digital existence for the preservation of documents? You know, where a lot of the transactions that happen in government are email, and to what extent is that printed out? To what extent is it lost in the cloud? What do you think is going to happen in the future in terms of historical documents?
I can relate a little bit to that. That's exactly what our directors, I'll digress just a minute, our six directors are the officers of our local Slater group. They meet monthly in a regular meeting, and it's open to any member that wants to come in. And I'll skip my wandering off at the subject here to say that the museum itself is open one day a week for middle morning, middle afternoon, so people have access. Well, as the directors have their published agenda, and invariably the president, Bob Mallon, will put on there, what do we keep? Because we're just now getting ready, and I'd like to talk about buildings in a little while here, Paul, if you don't mind. Yeah. We got to decide, what are you going to keep? Because how many artifacts are you going to have? And pieces of paper with information, or how many reels of film, blah, 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 blah. You could keep building buildings forever. So you have to be selective, and then you have to be sure you're keeping the things that history will, you'll do right by history by capturing the things that need to be captured and discarding. Because, for example, Aunt Fanny, my Aunt Fanny says, I'd like to donate this great big cake. It's always been in our family. It's a piece of, it goes back to 18XYZ. And so then you have to be careful when you take that. 6 months later, her daughter comes in. She passes away. Her daughter comes in. I'd like to have that back from my aunt. Whoa, 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 wait a minute. Where is it? Who's got it? How did you inventory it?
Sure.
Oh, boy. The record keeping and what's down the road for, as you say, Jefferson did a great job, but where's all his stuff?
Yeah.
It was all preserved, but can we do that for each community?
Yeah, it's an important thing, and I think that historians themselves will have to work out how we handle documentation and what we preserve in the digital world. And I know that a lot of these government transactions, as we're seeing with the Hillary Clinton situation, you can print out so many things that were emails and that sort of thing. But I'm just throwing that out there as a new world where things used to be written down, and there were so many voluminous communications that were preserved. And I kind of wonder about the future. But one thing that I'm sure Kate had fun doing, it happens that in Story City there was a whole era or 1 year was intense in terms of construction. And Kate, you might talk about 1913.
Sure. So we've got several homes, and then I think it was 26 homes and four major buildings that were built in Story City in 1913. And speaking of, you know, keeping things and preserving things, the GCC, the Greater Community Congress in Story City is what it was called at the time, kind of a precursor to our chamber, they actually did a printed flyer with photographs of all of these houses and buildings. So they were trying to preserve what happened that year. So we've got a copy of one of those, and I took it upon myself to go through and find where all these houses were located because, of course, it just said, you know, Mr. Johnson's house. It didn't have an address or anything. So it took some research and some time.
You had to do the research to put that together with a structure. And most of these are still existing, aren't they?
Most of them are. I think we were unable to find maybe two. So, yeah, most of them are still up and existing. And we did a driving tour that you could go through and see, you know, comparative photos of what it looked like in 1913 and what it looks like in 2013. So it was a very interesting idea for me to try and figure out.
Not only did you do that, but you also had a series running in the Story City Herald.
So correct.
We all look forward to what and by the way, one of the buildings that was constructed then is what we called the Old People's Home. It was a home for the aged, but also a hospital.
Correct.
And I was born there. Well, that's the modern-day Bethany Manor Nursing Facility is on that location, roughly. And it's one of the – that building's gone because
– Maybe you were the one that initiated that. I understood that when Kate got that project done, they doubled her pay.
Well, the point is this old building that was so beautiful and classic, it was torn down to make room for the new facility. And that was my birthplace. So it's one of the many reasons I can't be president. My birthplace is destroyed.
let me write on that, how the Alliance would relate to that. If Kate tried to report that project in the Alliance present as she gives her report, as when we meet, we would try to trump that by saying, well, 1913, that you were building buildings, tell you what we were doing in Slater. That was the first year that we turned electricity on in Slater. It came from on over the roadway from Madrid. And then the second thing we did, we started our water, municipal water system that year.
Really?
So we relate those things to each other when we meet.
Now, there are just sort of watershed moments like 1913.
Correct.
That was also when they built the main block in Story City that we now know as the theater block and the city hall. And it just seems like a unique thing that in 1 year so much construction and development could happen.
We talked a little bit here about, I guess we're pumping Slater and Story City a little bit. The listeners are hearing our cities because we're enamored about what we're doing. But I need to insert here that who's the newest, who's the oldest? It might be interesting here. Of the Alliance members, it would be Maxwell, and it was 1964. And Story City can brag upon their four buildings. I think Maxwell has five now.
They do.
And they have two big buildings on a main drag. Anyway, and you can imagine what that does for a budget to try to maintain five buildings. But in addition to that, Nevada has, I think their famous place is, see, it's Dowd. See, what's the name of that building? I'm out of it. They've got a building that they have kept near the current administration building for the county. But then they inherited, as I understand it, Evergreen Lane, which is a mammoth property that would land it, take you and I a day and a half to mow all the lawn. Been there, done it. Then the newest and the latest, we're really pleased, the first governmental unit in our county to step forward and make the Historical Association part of city government by ordinance, not by volunteerism, and coming along, but by ordinance, has been Zeering. And the most recent meeting of the Alliance was last spring at Zeering. So we want to keep pumping them up as they come on board and learn from the other Alliance members.
Well, Howard, you're reminding me of the extensive number of involved organizations here. I just wanted to read them off. We have the Ames Historical Society, Cambridge Historical Association, the Gilbert Historical Society, and the Huxley Historical Society. Kelly has a historical hall. Maxwell Community Historical Society. And you mentioned Nevada Community Historical Society. Mm-hmm. Also, Roland has a museum. and the Slater Area Historical Association. We have Ziering is also involved. So you see, this is quite an extensive organization.
I guess we could share that wasn't by memory. You people listening out there, he's not that good. He had the paper before him. We talked before the
Howard. You're blowing my cover.
Oh, I'm sorry.
People
sorry
were
about,
amazed.
Sorry about that. But I thought you might note on the very end of that a list on our that we all have before us for the listeners to know. Story County 4-H History Committee meets with us, so we tie that in, and even Iowa State comes on board when they're needed and desire to for extension activity.
I was thinking the Story County Fair just had a big anniversary.
You got they're high, they're heavy and high on history.
Right. Now, I was a boy there showing beef cattle. So in the 50s, I went to the fair, and in those days, we slept above the horse barn in a row of World War II surplus army bunks. In the heat, there were, well, we just didn't expect much, you know. We had some big fans, and then the trick was if people came in late to bed, you put their bunk over a knot hole or a hole in the wall and put a popsicle stick there so that when they sat on their bunk, one of the legs went through the floor.
Shame.
That's what we thought was funny in 1954.
You're talking about blowing your cover. That's trouble for you, mister. Your phone's going to be ringing. The 4-H people out there that are listening are looking for donors.
Yes, I know.
You're probably on their list.
Yeah, well, I've been on the foundation board at the at Story County, and there's just wonderful volunteers there. We have a great, rich background in the Story County Fair, and it's alive and growing and still just a county fair. There's no Ferris wheel there. It's all a youth 4-H fair. It's very pure. Hasn't changed much since the day I was there. The Methodist Church still has their stand there where it was when I was 8. So there's a great history involved there. Now, what about financial backing for... Is there some involvement with the county supervisors?
I guess a bit to the listeners, we kind of clued you in on that a little bit. We probably would not be able to pull off as many things as we do were it not for that good support there. Matter of fact, no political gain here, but every supervisor that I've ever been acquainted with has realized our plus in this alliance and have favored and helped us. I have to say, we really... Kate, correct me here. I don't think any of us reports exactly where we are financially. We learn from each other. Where do you get your funds? What, fundraising, grants? In some cases, I don't have anything to refer to, but I don't think all cities input. In other words, why wouldn't the city budget include something to provide your history? I'm sorry to say, I think over half of our alliance members do not receive city funds. I don't understand that, but I can't go into some other city. Our city does, minimally, but they're there. They're helping. And the supervisors have increased their funding over the years as they have met with us. And maybe now's the time for Kate to kick in, because your city is going to host the supervisors who usually meet with us in the fall. And we try to give them written reports, verbal reports, to the extent that we're not overcome with 6 hours of reporting.
Yeah.
But let them know what's going on for the benefits, as she said, of a little different operation in our county, in our alliance, rather than the central county operation. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense there, Kate?
Yeah.
Now, of course. Yes.
Now, Kate, are you hosting the...
We are hosting in the fall. So we will... Whoever hosts in the fall generally contacts the supervisors and see, you know, what's a good time for them. We generally in the fall, like, we usually meet on a Monday through Friday kind of day, usually during the day hours, too, where in the spring we generally be on a Saturday or something like that where more people can come. But we try to accommodate the supervisors since they're so nice to us and come meet with us and, you know, hear our reports and stuff like that. And we even, I mean, I was very, and Howard did a good job of this. When Ziering came on, we were concerned, are we going to each take a cut and have less funding, or will they, you know, step up and give them the same amount of funding that we were receiving already? And Howard was a big part of that, and they actually did, you know, the supervisors gave everybody the same amount, the same chunk that everybody else gets. So
hey, that's very good because, you know, finally you have to have some financial bridge to support all these things in some way. Because you can have your own fundraisers and all this sort of thing, but it's good to know that county government or city government backs you in some way financially.
Correct, yep. And then, as Kate indicates, we try to accommodate supervisors, obviously for the money, but they there's no fakey efforts on their part. I think when we were last at Slater, what, a year ago, Kate, about a year ago, every supervisor was there, and mm-hmm. they input. They gave us ideas of things, that resources some of us hadn't thought about that they know about because of their contacts with other counties. So it's a helpful educational thing.
Well, you know, there's somebody sitting here in the room with us, young Jonah. He's our engineer, also a musician. He's a keyboard man, and senior at Ames High School. And, you know, I don't want him to go to sleep. And so we have some music here that's sort of suggestive of what we're talking about. And it's some two people that I'm really fond of in my era, you know, Simon and Garfunkel. Here's their town. This is called, and you'll love this, Howard, My Little Town. Simon and Garfunkel, My Little Town, and boy, that dates me too. I remember Simon and Garfunkel in their heyday, and that song moves people like us because we're little town people. Well, Howard and Kate, it's really been fun today. Anything you want to add to what we've already talked about that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
Well, I've got some people down Slater listen, so here we go, Slater once again. Sorry. Okay. No, I guess I'm not sorry. The president will pull me aside and say, you forgot to mention the DVD, Howard, so all the people in the county could know it. So I'll pass it back to her and say, well, you can get to Story City and brag when we get there to Kate's meeting in the fall. Mm-hmm. But I should tell you that I don't know how much money's been spent yet. It's in the budget. And just to let you know, I'll just blurt it out. Our budget gets up there between $15,000 and $18,000, close to $20,000 a year in our alliance in Slater. And I guess that's not revealing something that isn't known to a lot of people in our territory. But we hired a choreographer, and we put together, because we did a cemetery walk once and cited the, I think it's 11 members of our community now interred that were members of the Civil War. And we put together a DVD about the Civil War, and we're going to ask Kate if we can show 2 or 3 minutes of that when we come together. And again, communications back to that. Maybe I could kick it over to Kate. We would be amiss if we didn't tell people about how they can reach us and collect individually as well as countywide through the communications.
Sure, sure. We'd like to give a note of thanks to Wayne Messer. He is our kind of website manager for the County Alliance. Our website is storycountyhistory.blogspot.com, and you can find all of our either our websites or our Facebook pages for each individual organization and contact information on that site for all of the County Alliance members. So it's a good site to know and share.
You know, it's wonderful to have these websites because people can Google and, you know, find your website. And from there, there are all links to everything. Just like here at KHOI, we have a website where you can stream past programs. That's the wonderful thing about the digital world, that all these things are so findable and so handy. All you need to know is the website, and that is storycountyhistory.blogspot.com.
That's a little different to say it and to spell it. That blog, B-L-O-G-S-P-O-T, blogspot.com.
Blogspot, yes. Yeah. And Kate, we have something coming up in the fall at Story City. We do.
We've got multiple things. I don't know how much time we have left, but we do have one of our main events. It's the 10th anniversary of our storytelling festival in Story City, and that'll be September 17th through 20th. And just to give a brief rundown of who we have coming in as far as storytellers, we have Connie Regan Blake, Mike Anderson, Jeff Doyle, and Duffy DeFrance. So
yes, I'm involved with that.
Yes.
And, you know, over time, we've become established enough to really draw some what are well-known, nationally prominent storytellers. So, and we also try to get a mix of cultural backgrounds, mm-hmm. Different kinds of regional people to tell stories of their area. One year we had a guy from Newfoundland telling tales of the sea, and we've had Native Americans. It's always fascinating to meet these people. And we had a Jewish lady from New York one year, and I put her up in one of our guest houses, and I said, I took her out to the schools because we go to the schools with the storytellers and they are fun at the schools. And I said, did you sleep well? No, it was too quiet in this little town. I says, well, I'll stand outside your window tonight and honk horns and make it sound like Lower Manhattan if you want. Well, these people come from such diverse backgrounds and we do have a great deal of fun. And it's something that I'm really devoted to myself. As I'm a storyteller myself to some extent. So we have that coming up, and that's a big thing. Anything else you want to mention, Kate, before we...
I would just like to say Story City is also hosting the 137th Annual Iowa Firefighters Convention.
Yes, the firefighters.
Yeah.
How many people are coming to town?
It's like 3,500 people or something, so that'll be a wow. big event
this
for Story City.
This is a major undertaking, and various yeah. churches and organizations will be involved in having their own stands and dinners and everything as fundraisers, so... It's a great thing for Story City to have this conference of firefighters coming. I see by the clock it's time to wind this up. Thank you for Kate File of Story City, and Howard's my co-host, so we'll hear from him at the end of the show. But right now, I want to introduce a segment called Community Service Appreciation, and this you'll find interesting, too. So roll it, Jonah.
Our organization this month for the Community Service Appreciation segment is the Legacy Learning Boone River Valley Organization. And to tell us about this, I have here in the studio Maureen Siemens. Welcome, Maureen.
Thank you.
The title of your organization is Legacy Learning Boone River Valley, which is a rather long-winded title.
It is indeed. And we started with the concept of economic development paradigm for Webster City. Webster City was hard hit by the loss of a major factory a couple years ago, and a group of us were talking one evening, and we thought it would be great to organize a new economic development idea around what we already have there that can't move, and that's our natural resources. We're really lucky to live in the Boone River Valley because of the beauty and the uniqueness of it. And so when we organized the nonprofit, we wanted to make sure that we were inclusive of not just the county, but the whole Boone River Valley.
So you're situated mostly in Webster City, and you give classes?
We do. We provide classes, and for now they're located mostly in Webster City. We started in the parks, and now we've spread throughout the community. We teach at the college. We teach at some local businesses. We bring resource professionals and artists in from all over the Midwest, and they pick a spot that works with them. And so,
you don't have a definite venue.
We don't.
All sorts of different venues.
We do. We use the venues throughout the county, mostly focusing on the parks and the natural resources. We do teach several of the classes at Briggs Woods. And in fact, they're building a new cabin in Briggs Woods, a log cabin that will have a large workshop space in the first floor just for legacy learning. So Briggs Woods is a really beautiful venue. So we've taught many of our classes there, but certainly not all of them.
Would you give us just an idea on the kind of classes you teach?
Okay, I say classes, but I really mean they're workshop-based. The really idea of a staycation where people come together to learn something that's been maybe on their bucket list, but then they haven't had a chance to pursue that. Our focus is for persons with leisure time, maybe the retired segment that has a little more time on their hands. But we've found that we've had a lot of interest among the young people as well. So we have really branched out, and we've taught many classes for many different ages. The Chautauqua Thing will actually focus on intergenerational classes.
So this is a class called the Chautauqua Thing, based on the idea of a Chautauqua from the 19th century?
The event we'll have in October around the Chautauqua is really going to be a learning weekend where we bring in all sorts of musicians, speakers, workshop presenters, et cetera, and focus on classes that are for adults as well as intergenerational classes.
So the Chautauqua Thing will be multi-classes, as it were.
Correct.
Lectures,
correct.
And events. And
we did a learning weekend last winter in the doldrums of late January, and we called it the Winter Getaway, and it was really successful. And we had people coming from all over to take those workshops, and so we thought that was a pretty successful concept. So we thought we would do a fall version of that, where we bring people in for an entire weekend. We're really trying to encourage people to stay in Webster City and get to know Webster City as a destination.
So that is what people do. They come for the weekend. And
they do. They do. They do.
So most of your classes take place at the weekends, do they?
Events do. The weekend events do. In general, we have focused on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday classes. That was to fill the cabins and the beds in Webster City. Weekends tend to be very, very busy and actually overbooked, but the weeks are less filled. So we kind of focus on that. What we found is we need a bigger mix. So now we do a little of all.
Mm-hmm. So people come and stay in the cabins and so on for the
stay in motels. A few stay in the cabins. Some are part of the golfers weekend that Briggs Woods already does. They stay in the cabins. We just did a demographic study, and people came for many reasons. Many came for family, to be with family, and many came because they had roots or class reunions or something like that in Webster City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, that's apparently one of the biggest reasons people travel in Iowa is to visit family or
Correct.
Come to Ames or
Right.
whatever.
Right. And what I've done personally, for instance, is I've invited family, and they have had so much fun. They've come from all over, several states away even, to just partake of the workshops, and we've had so much fun.
Yeah, and I just want to read the classes that I've got on this little handout here. Prairie pottery, horsehair raku, wild edibles, photographic treasure hunt, tool making, stones in archaeology, leather making rawhide drums, watercolor pencils, and landscape with oils and acrylics. And then in August, welding garden sculptures, willow garden furniture, outdoor photography, jewelry making, and so on. And it goes on. That's just a few of them.
It does go on.
You've talked a bit about the history and how it got started.
Four of us knew each other, and we really shared a love of both the arts and an appreciation of the beauty of our local environment, our natural resources. One of us is a retired natural resource professional that used to be head of forestry in Iowa, and he always had made the comment as our community went through such pain with the loss of a major manufacturer that moved to Mexico. He always said that because his loved one professional acumen was with trees, he always said, if we tied our economic development to natural resources, it is really part of the community forever.
Right.
It can do nothing but grow.
Mm-hmm.
It can't move. It can't be taken away. It is there for you forever. And he always had a real hope that we would understand someday as communities how important those natural resources were to our economic development as well as our spiritual.
And most of your classes and workshops tie together nature and art.
Correct. That's part of our mission. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. Could you say a bit more about your mission?
We have really tried to create a staycation atmosphere.
Staycation, where people stay.
Where people stay and kind of a mini retreat. We also long for the idyllic, able to get away for 2 weeks and go to the wilderness and study something exotic. But in all practicality, if we can get away several hours or a couple days, that's our special ability. So we address that market.
So most of your workshops and classes are just 2 days, are they?
They vary from half days to 3 days.
Okay, so it's an intense short period.
But that's a good way of putting it. It is an intense short period, and our professionals come from all over the Midwest and are really renowned in their field. They have so much to give, and it's really quite an amazing experience when you have no reason other than your own special love of something to share. And so the workshops are just very dynamic, interesting occasions where you learn so much from your peers, and the people you work with are as important as the teacher who presents. And we really want to emphasize that it's not classes as much as it is workshops. It's very dynamic. It's very active. And people actually make things and take things home.
Right.
They accomplish things. Right. So,
your classes and workshops, and they are active workshops where people produce things, they're not like the usual classes where people come for a few hours over a period of maybe a month or two. They are intense events for a couple of days, right?
They are. They really are meant to be an experience where you really share a love of something. But when you put people who really are either curious or already share a love of something, and then you put them with a really accomplished professional, you really have a dynamic environment for learning.
And people come for these events and stay in Webster City. So it's a little getaway for
them. They do. They stay in the motels and they share meals in the cafe. We have plenty of time to relax. We have a noon hour where people can leave and go to the coffee shop or get together at the restaurant. And that's actually one of the times you really get to share conversation because you get really involved in what you're making.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really a nice time to be able to share with the rest of the class over a meal.
Would you like to talk about some of the people that have had taken your classes?
Sure. I can talk about both the people who teach the classes or teach the workshops, present the workshops, and the persons who have come to take them. One of the people who took a class that was offered actually for our learning weekend last winter, my sister came from Illinois and she brought her family. And Rob is used to be former graphic design chair of a department at University of Illinois, and he now works for a private corporation as a designer. And he decided to take basket making, and he'd never done that before. And he was so challenged to do that that then my cousins had to one-up that, and they said, well, if Rob's going to do it, we're going to do it. And so we had quite a basket making adventure. Some of my cousins came and took the welding for garden sculpture that was offered by the local garden store. Tim Adams is an accomplished welder who's probably recognized for his artworks throughout this area. He's shows at many of the art fairs. And so we worked with him in his studios. And that was really an exciting experience. The people came from all over for that workshop. It filled very quickly, and they've asked for more.
Now, you get a lot of support from the local community, I believe, that help you with this. You are a nonprofit, but you get a lot of help from.
We have. We've been very fortunate to have received our third local hotel motel grant, and that really shows that there's a lot of local support for it and that they appreciate the fact that it could be long-term economic development for our community.
And it brings people in.
Bring people in, and it really shares what we're already proud of and knowledgeable about with others. There's a model for this. North House is a learning community in the Duluth area and Grand Marais. And they have created, they started with Norwegian crafts, and it's really turned into a dynamic economic development tool for the area. So that's kind of an interesting paradigm for us to look at. And so we've also been fortunate to get an Iowa Tourism grants. We've applied for Iowa Arts Council. We're waiting with apprehension to hope to feel see if we got that grant. And then we've had Iowa Economic Development support. So we are really fortunate. We're very active grant writers.
Let's talk a little bit about the upcoming classes. Now, one of them is called The Chautauqua thing. Based on the idea of the Chautauqua, which was popular in the 19th century.
It was. And so it's an unfamiliar concept now, but we thought how fun to have that idea of being a learning community where no matter what you wanted to learn about or be curious about or wonder about, you could come and maybe test the waters at a weekend in Webster City. We actually say Chautauqua, and it's a U in every syllable. So that's a way to remember it.
And, of course, in the 19th century, they didn't have TV or movies, and this was people went to lectures and classes as a form of entertainment.
They did. They did. It was actually quite a popular event for a while. There are still some Chautauquas in the Northeast, and I think there is in Pocahontas Chautauqua Days. So I think they might have a yearly celebration.
And what's going to happen at your Chautauqua?
We are going to have a variety of sessions. We'll have quilt making. We'll have basket making. We will have a pottery class. We're going to have an old car workshop where people can talk about how they got into that or what they'd like to share with newbies in that field. And we've encouraged businesses that have certain things in theirs. Stony Creek will offer a welding workshop again. And the SOS store has a leather maker that's resident there, and he will offer a workshop in his space. So throughout the community, there's going to be several events. There's also going to be a stress management, essential oils. There's going to be musicians. Flying Pig Studios and band will be coming. They'll be giving both lessons and presenting a performance. We'll have Mike Zam is a children's storyteller, musician slash artist. That's a lot of fun. He'll be there. David Raven is a painter who's coming from the Twin Cities. He came last year, and it was a wonderful experience. We met in the park, and it was really, whether you were an accomplished painter or had much experience painting, or you'd painted for years and years, it was just a lovely, lovely weekend.
I'm just looking at the earrings you're wearing. Are those handmade or...
Well, I'm an artist, so pretty much everything I have is handmade by someone, not often myself, but I'm a potter, so I do clay sculpture and metal sculpture. So, but I certainly appreciate the handwork of others. And I've enjoyed taking some of the classes that are really outside my field.
Well, it sounds if there's a lot of really interesting stuff here, and as you say, in a beautiful part of the country, beautiful part of the state. I've been talking to Maureen Siemens of Legacy Learning. And again, the website is Legacy Learning BRV, standing for Boone River Valley, legacylearningbrv.org. And you can find the details of the classes there. And I'm Kay Patrick. I've been talking to Maureen Siemens of Legacy Learning, Boone River Valley.
Well, you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and this is where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thank you for joining us today. I've been your host, Paul Wearson, together with Howard Hammond. We've been speaking about all the area historical societies in Story County, along with Kate File. Thank you, Kate, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Local Talk is on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m., You can also listen to today's entire local talk show and all of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you also find information about the people you heard today on the show, along with contact information and links to the people, places, and things we talked about.
Local Talk was engineered today by Jonah DeGeest, and our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Now, Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means that you can be a part of our team as a volunteer reporter. We'll train you and you will learn and love more about our community than you ever dreamed you would. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and come again on the radio.